You're entering the MSP Zone, a podcast for the managed services community, covering news, analysis, and interviews from around the globe. Elevate your MSP game by staying in the MSP Zone. And now, your host, Charles Weaver.
Things to consider when you are about to go through the MSP Verify process. We've actually alluded to MSP Verify quite a lot, but I just realized we haven't really had a lot of substantive conversations with our members who have gone through the MSP Verify, and that's exactly what we're going to cure today. And so I wrangled some members out of the great state of Texas to come on to the program and share some of their thoughts, expertise, and experiences as not just MSPs of long standing in the MSP space, but also as, I should say, experts at having gone through the MSP Verify many years now in a row. And they're going to give us some of their perspective and just share some thoughts about the whole process. So I would like to welcome to the MSP Zone Carl Springer from Sagis. Carl, welcome.
Thank you, Charles.
So I appreciate you sharing your rainy. I understand it's raining there in Texas, and thanks for being with us today.
You bet.
So you guys have been around at Sagis for many, many years. You've been a practicing MSP. You have seen some aspects of this profession that few have. And so I think your perspective is very valuable to the rest of the people out there listening. Maybe we could start with just a quick summary of who you are and what, you know, Sagis and what you guys have been about for the last, 20 years or so.
You bet. Yeah, Sagis is an outgrowth from my CTA firm, actually, back in the late 90s. We had an operation that was in our accounting firm, Middleton Burns Davis, and we decided to spin it off. My partners didn't want to have anything to do with it, and so I just took it, and it was a subsidiary organization out there. We did managed services. That's all we did. And then in 2011, when we sold our practice, just decided, let's see what we can really do with this thing. So we've taken it and grown a very, very nice business out of it. And as we grew that particular business, I just with my background as a CPA, just having a better understanding of how good our processes were and the things that we needed to be doing, I started looking at a stock engagement, and the primary purpose was not for any specific client that needed it, but it was just process improvement, business process improvement. And so that started us on the journey in terms of looking for and engaging and getting a stock, and then also discovering the Verify engagement.
So as a CPA, and for those that don't know, I mean, in late 90s, not to date Carl and I, but you know, that's pre SAS 70, if I'm not mistaken, Carl. That was well before any audits were really in vogue.
That's correct.
So you didn't have a customer that was driving you towards this. It was really, you wanted to know, did you want to know more about your process and whether it was working the way it should, or did you just want to, I mean, you know, what was the motive behind an internal kind of focused audit?
Yeah, I knew the value of the stock engagement. I thought we had a pretty good company in terms of our business processes, our documentation, all the things that go around that. But the way that you prove it is to have an independent third party come in and really challenge you. And what I thought was a pretty good company turned out to be an okay company, and that there was a lot of areas that we could really improve our processes and those were uncovered by going through this particular engagement. So, but the thing that really drove it was a desire to validate that the things we were doing were the things that we needed to be doing.
Do you? I this may be an unfair question to ask, but do you think that other MSPs have a perspective of what they think is going on that is maybe different than what is actually going on in their MSP practice?
Well, I can tell you from my experience that where you're just seeing the things that are being done, you don't have an ability to go through and really sample and test and inspect. And, you know, there's the old adage, people do what you inspect, not what you expect. But the fact of the matter is that if we do, as business owners, we do expect that our staff and our business is doing certain things, and we just don't have the time that we need to go in and inspect it. So my guess would be that most of us expect that our businesses are doing a lot, that our teams are doing a lot more than maybe than they really are.
Right. Right. And did you, so you got some practical takeaways. Were you surprised at some of the things that were uncovered, or were these things that you kind of thought, but didn't exactly know were?
I think it's a combination of when you're challenged by an independent third party on where is this, are you doing this? And it's not so much that you need to be doing it or you don't need to be doing it. They're simply asking, are you doing this? And they're reporting in a SOC engagement, yes, they do these things. No, they don't. A lot of people don't realize that a SOC engagement is not a certification. So it's just this, here's what the business processes are that you're doing. So when you go through that and you're being challenged on it, it does get you thinking in terms of, is what we're doing really a best practice, or they're asking me that question for a reason, and I should probably take a look at that and see if there's something we need, some additional processes that we need to build into our structures.
Yeah, no, good point. How have your customers, you've said that this wasn't a customer demand, and we do quite frankly see a lot of MSPs who are doing this chiefly because they're being asked to, right? So you're kind of somewhat rare. I mean, it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen where an MSP says voluntarily, look, I want to do this because of something other than a customer making me or asking me for it. How have Sage's customers or prospects reacted to the fact that you've gone through this, you know, MSP Verify process with a SOC report as well?
Well, I think it's certainly something that as soon as we did it, we did start to actively market it to our larger and more sophisticated clients and even to the smaller clients that we have undergone this, that an independent third party has come in and looked at. We have a report that you can review and read to see what we're doing and what we're not doing. And with the smaller clients, I don't know that there's as much interest or that there was. Now we're starting to see more interest in it. But with the larger clients, it was something that, that yes, they wanted to see that report. And somewhere along the line, it was probably about a year after, it was probably after the first year that we had done our SOC engagement and the Cloud Verify, that we actually had one of our existing clients that got acquired, and the acquiring company out of San Francisco sent somebody on site to do due diligence. We were able to give them that particular report, and that actually is still a client today. I was notified when the company sold that they would be transitioning that particular part of the operation to their IT group, and actually it still continues to be a very viable, good client of ours today. So I wasn't thinking of it in terms of saving a client relationship, but it did save a client relationship, and that client has continued to grow. So once we did that, though, we had more and more clients that were prospects that when we were talking to them, the fact that we had at the time was a SOC 1, now we're a SOC 2, and also you have the Cloud Verify that goes along with it. But the fact that we were doing those particular engagements became important, and then they became requirements. So some of our contracts now require that we have a SOC report as part of that contract.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're an early adopter. Customers aren't asking for it, but now you're anticipating, you know, a future where maybe more and more customers are going to start requiring it. And obviously you're already there, so it's not like you have to play catch up. You've got it.
I'm going to guess we probably have 10, 12 of our clients that now that require that. And some of these were not clients when we got them, when we did the original engagement. And part of the reason why we got the engagement or that we got that particular prospect was because of the SOC and the cloud Verify engagement.
Is it fair to say that you are competing at a different way than you did prior to MSP Verify in the SOC report, or is that overstating it?
No, I think we are starting to see ourselves transitioning into that. And when I say transitioning, there are certain clients that they don't value the things that we do. They really are probably more of a break fix type of a client. We don't have any break fix, but they're
right.
Probably that's the way that they still view us. And as you go through these engagements and you start putting best practices and you start upping your tool set and the quality of the tool sets, you kind of find that there's part of your client base that really the economics just don't work for them anymore. It should work for them, but they don't perceive the value there. And so what it does is it does move you up the food chain in terms of the kind of clients. This was nothing that we planned out or thought, oh, this is what we want to do or where we want to go. It just naturally started that we're seeing this happen with our client base. So some of the smaller clients, we're just finding that it's more difficult to serve them with all the structure that we have built around the around these processes and controls and tool sets. So and they end up just moving on to, you know, smaller MSPs.
Right. They don't understand it. Don't value it. Makes sense. So if you were to, because we get asked this question a lot, what do I need to know? What because they've never been through this before, and I can appreciate that, you know, like Sagis, before and after you've gone through this, you know, there's a lot that you know, having been audited and, you know, yeah, audited by a third party. What advice would you give to, you know, average MSPs who are thinking about this, who've never been through this type of process before and maybe apprehensive or they just don't know what to expect?
Yeah, very, very good question. And I love this question because having been an auditor on the other side, financial side of it, I knew what, okay, here's what we do. This is the purpose. This is what we're doing. When you're on the other side of the equation, which I found myself a number of years ago, when you find yourself on the other side of the equation, you recognize that there are certain things that are really, really valuable to have as the company that's being audited. And one of the things that's really, really valuable to have is to have an organization, and I'm going to go ahead and plug the MSP Alliance here, but it's really, really valuable to have an organization that understands MSPs, understands what this process is, and can guide you through the pre-audit, pre-audit piece of it to prepare you to have the actual auditors come in and do the work. So that particular piece of it is something that a lot of people don't really appreciate, what it takes to get yourself ready to do an audit. And when you do this, this is not something that is going to take a couple of weeks. This is 2, 3, 4 months worth of commitment and time and energy the first year you go through it. Now, once you go through the first year, now you're basically tweaking and improving, and you know you don't have the same kind of investment that you do the first year. But the first year, you do have a significant time investment in terms of just getting yourself ready to be audited, and again, MSP Alliance does a great job in terms of preparing the company to be ready to be audited. So I think one of the things that I found, again by accident, was that this is a great training platform for management, for leadership, for the people in your organization that are your up and comers. And so for me, I put my son in charge of it. He had come into our organization, was doing a very good job. The guys in the office said, "Yeah, this is a keeper. We need to." Would you like to hear that about your son? But I probably spent 6 months discouraging him from getting into this business. So that's another story. But anyway, but he did come into the business, and I just said, you know, this is a great way for you to learn about this business. And so he basically took over and ran the processes and did all the work, everything that needed to be done in that particular area. And what I discovered was that I basically put him into a management training leadership program, sub-leadership program, but in a management training program in terms of how our operations work, all the different aspects of the our business. Because not only do you get in to have all the service side of it, but you have the contract side of it, you have the financial side of it. There's a lot of different pieces here. So one of the things that I would encourage people to do is look within your organization and find who are people in my organization that I really want to get immersed in terms of developing their management, their leadership skills along the way. So the other thing is that having a person that is leading the person that leads this and is in charge of it needs to have authority to make change. And as we all know, making change is it can be a challenge at times. And so the person that is doing this needs to have the backing of ownership, of manager, whoever it is that they need that backing, that drives that process improvement, that drives those documentation platforms to be upgraded, improved, that drives changes in the way that tool sets are being managed. The person that you have needs to have that kind of authority, and people need to know that when they tell you, when that person says, "We're going to have to make some changes here, and here's what these changes need to be," that it's not one of those, "Okay, yeah, we'll get around to it when we have time." It needs to be implemented, and there needs to be some authority behind this is going to get done.
So that's really interesting that you said that. So it's having people that cannot just know where the information is and grab the information. You think that having people, now is it people active on the project or just aware of it, and maybe, you know, a corporate sponsor, depending on how big the MSP practice is? You think that someone with policy or change authority needs to be involved, whatever that means, right?
Absolutely. They have to be able to drive those changes through the organization. Otherwise, what you'll find is that, and we'll just use your staff at MSP Alliance. Okay, here's things that need to be done. And if that person doesn't have the ability to really drive those changes and get them ingrained in the company, then you kind of find that you've got, excuse the term, but Chinese drip torture. It just kind of drags out a little bit and drags out and drags out and drags out, because those changes are not really being adopted and implemented in the organization. And so you want to have somebody that can make that happen so that you can keep the process moving along. As an auditor, and I'll just speak from my auditor side on that side of it, probably the biggest challenge that we had was that we would send something out, that a request for documentation or something about a process, an accounting process. And because it wasn't being done that way, and the person that we requested didn't really have the authority, that we'd have to go back 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks later and ask, hey, what's the status of this? How is this moving along? And you would learn that, okay, you need to take it to a certain level in order to get this done, so that if you just make that person who's in charge have that authority that they can drive the change that needs to be done to get that information. And it just makes the process so much more efficient and so much more and just much easier. But like I said, I think the first time you go through this process, you need to plan on spending, you know, 2, 3, 4 months on it. After that, it's a lot more streamlined. But that first year, there's a lot of work that gets put in place to be able to get yourself to a point where you can actually be audited.
Right, right. No, that's really helpful. I hadn't thought about the making sure that the right level of people are involved. In terms of how you handled, you know, maybe that first year and subsequent years, if that's relevant, that, you know, the balance between being an everyday practicing MSP and then also going through this, I think that, you know, a lot of people say, okay, is this possible? Right? Do I have time in the day? Do you have any tips or you know, advice for MSPs who are saying, do I have time to do this? You know, how did you approach that time management side of it?
I think that's a very valid question. And I think that for most companies on the, again, in that initial year, do I have time to do it? You have to manage your time, but you're going to come out the other end with a more efficient organization. And so those efficiencies that you pick up from having gone through this particular process, and just what it does for your entire organization, it just makes you a better, stronger organization. And obviously, as you're a better, stronger organization, you do gain time, and time that we spend on other things. But you do gain time. So I would look at it from the standpoint of, I'm going to make an investment of time here, and I'm going to get that time back organization-wide for that investment.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good to know. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask a question related to security, because it's what's on a lot of MSPs' minds. It's on a lot of customers' minds these days. The MSP Verify process, with or without the SOC, because globally, not everyone around the world who gets this has a SOC report like Sages does. Speak to security, right? Did you learn anything about security in your first or subsequent years of going through this that, you know, might be relevant to an MSP saying, is this for me?
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, we did. And in the first couple of years that we did the engagement, we probably looked at it and said, okay, this is something we need to address. It wasn't necessary or requirement for us to end up, it's for us to get the to get the engagement done, but just something as simple as, I mean, we think of it as simple now, but something as simple as multi-factor authentication, two-factor authentication. those are things that when you're asked, no, we don't do that right now. But it gets you thinking, and you start, as you start going through and looking at the at your processes, you realize, okay, we need to start adding in stronger security measures. And so we've seen that happen all through our organization as far as the security profiles that we have internally for our systems, and also that we have for or that we recommend, and most of our clients have implemented. So you're asked questions that you might have just overlooked or hadn't thought about, and once you're posed with it, is, oh yeah, I guess we probably should do something about that. So there's definitely a security element,
right,
that comes out of it.
So it's not a, you've never thought of it before, but maybe it's the last push, the gentle push to get you to do something that you may have been thinking about but haven't actually pulled the trigger on yet.
Yeah, it's on your list, on your whiteboard, and it just hasn't gotten up to the top. You haven't crossed it off yet.
Yeah. No, perfect. So, well, I appreciate your time, Carl. I want to ask you one last parting question. So, you know, a little bit about Sagis for those customers out there who are, you know, looking for an MSP. You know, what are you guys doing on the horizon? You know, what types of customers are you seeing success with in terms of, you know, customers of yours that are finding a value and are getting problems answered from a managed services standpoint with Sagis?
Yeah. Well, first off, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we're very, very diverse. A lot of service sector, but we do have manufacturing, we have logistics, we have obviously oil and gas. There's our particular MSP does not have any specific industry other than, I would say, service-based industries. And so in that particular area, we've got we're looking for companies that are very, very cognizant of their security profiles, and also just moving a lot of stuff into cloud-based. So the the Office 365, the Azure platforms, et cetera. So those are the kind of companies that we tend to work with, but we don't have any specific industry area that we really focus on.
Well diversified, as we say in the industry.
Well diversified, yes. So it served us well through this last year, because some of the companies that were challenged, others were taken advantage of the situation. I don't know if taken advantage of, but they were in the right place to be able to weather the storm. So we weathered that pretty well.
Well, that's great to hear. Carl Springer from Sagis, thank you very much. For those of you who would like to learn more about Sagis as a company, you can find them on the web. And very much appreciate your insight and guidance for a lot of other service providers out there globally who are, you know, either going through this process for the first time this year, thinking about going through it. Very much appreciate it, Carl, and hope you come back to the MSP Zone in the future.
We'll do it.
All right. This is Charles Weaver with the MSP Zone. Until next time.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a like. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast so you'll get notified when future episodes are released. We will see you next time in the MSP Zone.